Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we've got Cyrus Wadia. Cyrus is the CEO at Activate. Cyrus, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Hey, pleasure to have you on. Let's start with Activate. Would love to learn more about the company and what problem it's solving in the market.
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit in the business of science entrepreneurship. And let me kind of take a second to explain what that means. We scout the best and brightest talent in science and engineering, technical talent across the country, and we give them support through the form of a fellowship program. And that fellowship program is really designed to help them basically transition from being a lab expert in the lab to being the CEO of their own venture, to bring to life and to market the thing that they invented in the lab. And so a two-year support structure. And we crowd in a lot of community support around the fellowship. So folks like yourself and others in the venture community and others that can help support these new startups as they get going.
And so I heard you say lab, which starts to answer my first question. So our next question was going to be is like, when do you find that these scientists and engineers are best situated to engage Activate?
You know, it's a really good question. Now, we do look across a spectrum all the way from, you know, just having finished a PhD to having done a postdoc to being a faculty member. And we've had fellows that kind of fit all of those. We also have fellows that have come in from the private sector, folks who have worked for a little bit. What I have kind of basically learned in our history of doing this, keep in mind, you know, we've supported over 300 of these science fellows since our start, and we're growing fast. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a second. But over the course of, you know, looking at 300 fellows, one of the best insertion moments in a person's career trajectory is really right after that PhD, or like during or right after the postdoc, because at that moment in time, they're making a career decision, right? I mean, they're either going the academic route, maybe they'll think about going to the private sector. These folks are so talented that there's no shortage of opportunities available to them. So what the fellowship does is at that moment in time, as they're making a big career decision, we're keeping them in the game for entrepreneurship and truly thinking through how they can bring the thing that they worked for, you know, years on into the world.
And so is there a focus on geography?
Well, I guess there's two ways to answer that. So one, we've been US based for our entire lifespan, which is about 10 years. This year, we made the decision and we're going to go even broader to go international. So we just started in Singapore. For any of those listening, hopefully by the time you hear this, if you're in Singapore, you have a great idea. We have an open process right now for finding you. We have expansion plans already in play for other places that we can be internationally. But for argument's sake, you know, our entire history and our experience is based on a US-based program. But even within the US, we found that the way to best support our fellows is through sort of micro cohorts within the broad fellowship program. Okay. So let me give you some numbers. We see about 1,000 applicants a year in the US, and we're able to support anywhere between 40 and 50 fellows across the country. But we subdivide those by community because, you know, as we get into this, there's kind of a magical number of a cohort that is really intimate that can help you as you're kind of a budding entrepreneur learning new skills, but not so big that you lose traction or it's harder to gain trust or to kind of have time. So we have five communities that we run. Yeah. One that was the original community, it started in Berkeley. It's called Cyclotron Road. It's a partnership with the Department of Energy's Berkeley National Lab.
Yeah.
We have a community in Boston, in New York, in Houston, and we have a virtual community we call Activate Anywhere. And each of these communities are somewhere between 8 and 10 new fellows every year. And so because it's a two-year program, they're overseeing somewhere between 16 to 20.
Wow. And then is there a focus on any specific engineering domains, or does it vary cohort to cohort?
Activate's mission is squarely around sustainability. So when we're looking at different types of ideas, that's our first filter. Now, within that, we have many different sort of categories, chemistry and materials, industrial manufacturing, energy, water. We do take some fellows every year in life sciences, agriculture. And so when you look at these thematic areas, they do sum up to one thing, which is these are the industries that they are mainstream industries, but these are the industries where we believe change needs to occur for both people and planet and the future of what we're building. So that's kind of exciting. I should probably state explicitly, we don't do software, we don't do AI. Like, we're in the business of the physical world. So steel in the ground, that's who we are. And that's called deep tech. And it's hard tech in other corners because it is very hard. You know, getting the capital in the system that could support these types of ventures, it's a longer duration and it's a slightly different return model than if you were investing in the next great LLM. So it's historically been under supported, and we are just one of many that are like committed to these types of technologies that can really help shape the world in the future.
What does the 2 year time frame look like? Can you unpack the different modules or subject matter that you want to impart on the participants?
So think about it this way. You know, this is a big shift for an individual. They're trained to be excellent at scientific discovery and development. And when we pick them up, there is a transformation that needs to happen, right? That was your job. Now your job is to run a business and all the things that come along with that. So number one, it starts with funding. We provide financial support, a living wage, basically, and some end benefits, and also kind of a core stipend that is used to build the company or to de-risk the technology. That is critical because, and if you don't have that part, like I said earlier, this talent's going to go in different places. And, you know, if you want to keep them in the game, learn the skills of entrepreneurship, this is their first moment of taking that big risk that defines who an entrepreneur is. And we give them the financial support that makes that a little bit easier, but it's still a risk because, they don't know what's on the other side of that. So that's financial support. The other thing that we provide is direct mentorship. And I think this is what really starts to set us apart from other programs, because we believe in direct coaching and mentorship, education. We have on the ground with all of our fellows, a crack team of three who are dedicated entirely to the kind of the movement of these fellows through their own learning curve as they make that transformation. And it's everything, right? Like, how do you incorporate? How do you build a culture? How do you make your first hire? How do you make your first fire? Like, these are the things that in running a business, and that says nothing also of the storytelling, the fundraising, but these are the things in running a business that, you know, if you're learning for the first time, having someone who's done it, and that's what these teams are. They're staff, like I said, they're teams of three, but we have managing directors who have already done it. They have a technical background typically, and they've come in to help train and mentor. So it's like deep coaching. And then on top of that, we talk a lot about community. And, you know, if I think about the Activate flywheel, when we started, we ran this as an experiment at Berkeley Lab where we brought fellows into the program. Companies came out the other end. And we're super excited about what we're seeing there still. But fast forward 10 years, now a bigger community has formed around Activate and the scientists we bring into the program. And that now, I think, is the critical inertia for keeping this flywheel going. So community to us, it's a lot of different things, but it's a broader ecosystem of support for these particular like serious individuals doing hard things, and how that support can kind of dip in, dip out, but also be sustained over their career. So I've given you kind of a long answer. So I'm going to give a shot at just trying to give you the bite-sized version, which is Activate in 2 years. We provide financial support. We provide funding, initial funding to, you know, de-risk technology, build the company. We provide direct mentorship, which is different than many other programs. And we actively build for an ecosystem that's going to constantly support. So those are the things that we're providing.
Are the engineers able to stay wherever they're currently living when they get accepted into the program?
Not always. So when they come into the program, they have to select the community they want to be part of. And we have a strong bias for in-person, you know, programming and activity, because not everything can be achieved successfully this way. So when they come into the program, they're making a commitment to be within earshot of the geographic hub. So sometimes they do end up moving.
As far as funding, what can you share as to how much or terms?
Oh, you're saying what they get? Hmm? Yeah. So $100,000 a year in basic salary. On top of that, they get health benefits, and then an additional $100,000 over the fellowship as a recoverable grant. And that means if they end up hitting milestones, they raise funds, they can return those funds to Activate. It's like a really successful model. If they don't, that's theirs, but that's theirs to basically for the company. Maybe it's about making a hire. Maybe it's about buying a piece of equipment. Maybe it's about, you know, doing the other things.
I totally make sense having mentors who've been there, done that, available to them over the course of the program. Curious whether or not there's ever been any discussion of pairing them with a co-founder who maybe an MBA or someone who's had more business experience.
Okay. This is a common question and a good one. The short answer is yes. There are moments where they come into the program and they self-identify as maybe the future CTO of a company or a head of engineering. And in that case, they sometimes come in with a co-founder who can also go through the Activate experience. We call these affiliate fellows. It's a really powerful part of the model. But for any scientist or engineer who wants to be the CEO to actually run the business, that is why Activate exists as well, because we are, you know, we firmly believe if you're trying to retire risk in these hard tech ventures in the very early days, there is a model that we're proving where the scientific founder can be the right person to be thinking about risk from both the business and the technical point of view, that a forced pairing is not what we're about. If the person coming as a fellow like already knows, hey, I want to, you know, actually partner, we are 100% supportive of that. And we have a mechanism for it. But other than that, we firmly believe that scientists can be the CEOs, and they're showing and they're demonstrating that every day. If you look at our alumni.
I believe it. I mean, Elon's a standard.
Yeah.
I think even non-technical founders aspire to. So totally makes sense. How many years has the program been operating?
10 years. We've supported roughly 300 founders, scientific founders. That's led to about 230 companies. And Here's a stat that I think is really worth knowing, that those companies after Activate have raised collectively $5 billion in follow-on funding.
Great. So just activate stakeholders. I would imagine it'd be really beneficial to have relationships with corporates, maybe even so those who had their own venture capital arms.
Would it be valuable? Yes. And do we have those relationships? Yes. I will say this, as someone who, was in the corporate space and looking at innovative, sustainable X underline, where Activate comes in may still be very early for some of the things that larger companies are looking for, because they want certain things at scale already. So there's a range. Now, but that being said, we get a lot of interest from corporates. One example of that is at New York Climate Week just last year, we ran a session with Microsoft, because as they, you can think about all these hyperscalers, but as they think about scaling data centers and compute, water becomes a really big question, as does like cooling, of and all the technology that we could bring that actually shaped that conversation. It was a really productive dialogue, and that continues. So that's an example. I don't think we have as deep relationships with corporates across all the areas that we work, and that's something that we'll probably look at more and more as we go. But in certain key areas where corporates are ready to go a little further upstream and see the frontier of science innovation, yeah, we're probably the best option for them right now in that way.
I think it makes good sense. I remember the other question I was going to ask, but I've
Okay.
heard anecdotally in the past that there have been US accelerators who sought to fund their models with corporate sponsorship. And one of the challenges I've heard that they face is, it's conceivable that a founder in the corporate could be at odds. Founder has a vision, you want them to execute on it. Corporate has a strategic mandate, which may not necessarily align with the founder's vision. And so I can see, when there's a meeting of the minds, it's brilliant. Talk about a win-win. But in the absence, I would generally defer to Activate's mission of empowering founders, because it's their vision that is the necessary ingredient to, deal with the challenges of bringing the company to life.
Yeah, I think what you said isn't just exclusively about corporates, but it's true of any investor that comes in, that you're going to quickly learn, okay, where am I compromising? Where am I not compromising? And what Activate does really well, we invest in human capital. Okay, so we focus on the founder, not the technology or the company. And what that does, this is where I see real long-term dividends getting paid, because what that does is it helps them evaluate those trade-offs as they come, even after Activate. So it grounds them in terms of what their mission is, what their values are, why they got into this in the first place. And I think we've helped them be a little bit cautious about who you're going to partner with and who you're going to kind of get support from. Because as soon as you do, right, you're on a bunch of people's clocks, not your own clock. But I've seen it time and time again where there are good outcomes for the individual, in part because they learn these things at the very beginning of the process when Activate gets, gets them in the program.
Yeah, it's funny. You're right. I mean, I think it's more broadly investors. I think my thoughts go to corporates is because generally you'll find financially focused investors pursuing software and AI, given that the capital profile is different as compared to hardware. But your point is still extremely valid. It's like, regardless of who's cutting the check, having alignment with your vision and the cap table is very valuable, to say the least.
I'll tell you this. Okay, so when I think one thing I wish, if I could wait, that more entrepreneurs understood is the realities of a large corporate. You look at a large corporate and you're like, oh, They can bring my stuff to scale faster. I just need their investment. They need to bring my technology into their pipeline. And I think what people have is an incomplete understanding of how this actually works. And there's a million reasons, like dumb reasons, why things die in terms of innovation that can actually get integrated. But I feel like there's a lot of good reasons too, which is, these corporations, they're operating at a scale that is like really unimaginable to many entrepreneurs. And so it's not so simple to just take your thing that you created and just slide it into a product or service line. There's a lot that needs to happen. And so while the incentive structures inside corporates may not be fully sufficient for the scale of the big problem that we're trying to solve, what is true is even if they were aligned more, there's only so much a corporate can metabolize. And so they have to be really judicious about what they're bringing in and when. Now, that's what I'm describing is slightly different than corporate venture, because what I'm describing is actually onboarding technology into a corporate and their main business. But corporate venture then has to be super sharp on, okay, well, what's the future of my business look like? And where do I need to place my bets now? And there's no guarantee that those companies they place bets on are the things that they're going to bring into the company long term. But, corporate ventures a slightly maybe has more degrees of freedom, but it still has to be core to the business of what they're doing.
Said another way, the demand is great, but be thoughtful. I'm curious. Okay, so now I remember what I was going to ask is, so looking back over the years, what patterns have you seen with engineer participants who've had the most success, and then also who are the ones who maybe, either necessarily could have done better, but weren't necessarily the best fit?
I think I want to come to this point I made earlier. It's a different job. If you're the CEO responsible for running a business, a for-profit venture, that is a very different job than if you're a technical expert who has been sort of rewarded over your entire career for being the smart person in the room, for knowing something that the world is curious about, for developing knowledge. And so, okay, well, why do I go right there? Because what I think, if I look at patterns, the folks who have been able to make the transition fastest are those that invest in communication as a sort of a core skill, who invest in learning the business. I fundamentally believe in two things, just having kind of the benefit of hindsight now, that could help a scientist make this transition. And number one is knowing how to ask for help, meaning being the first one to the table to say, I don't think I know the answer to this, and I don't know how to get the answer to this. So that is an opener for people who want to support you. A lot of scientists, and look, I'm one of them, right? I can say this because I was a PhD, I did research, I understand that world, maybe just having lived there. A lot of times you're rewarded for having the answer, like this is the expert. So moving from being the expert to having the self-awareness and humility to basically say, I don't actually have the answer to that. I don't know if that's easy for a lot of folks out there. And that's not exclusively scientists. I mean, that's true of, folks in the business world too. I've seen it all the time. So that's number one. And then I think the other thing that I believe in, which is a little bit specific to science, but it's harder for scientists, you have to be a decisive leader. Sometimes making a decision is better than knowing if you've made the perfect decision. So why do I say that? You're never going to have complete information, and you better get comfortable with that. You are never going to have a consensus of like all the people that you value their opinion, and you better get comfortable with that. So in this world, day and age, I fundamentally believe those who can kind of rip and run, bias to action, are going to be the ones that actually make it on the other side. And so to do that well, coming from an environment where it's all about getting more data, more data, more data, it's how do you train yourself as a, a technical expert coming into a program like Activate to trust your gut sometimes and know that you'll never have complete information? And actually, the more important question is know when you've collected enough to basically make a call and just move forward. And so those two things to me are like fundamental ingredients that not everybody figures out, or it takes time. Probably took me, many, many years. Like I can't profess that I've learned those things in a couple years, but I'm still working on them. But I think that, folks who can kind of get that fast, they are the ones I'm seeing, like really move faster with their business.
I agree with you 100%. My experience and experience of working with other founders absolutely validates exactly what you said. And I think your assessment as the root cause is spot on.
Mm.
And just as a species, we want to know, our ego comes into play and we know we're going to be right. But we operate with insufficient information. And so you have to make a judgment call.
Yeah.
And therein separates, and I'll say this, yes, being able to get the initial call correct more often than wrong obviously is extremely valuable. But I would actually say what's actually even more difficult is admitting that you are wrong and changing once you have additional information.
Yeah. And building a team that's comfortable with that and that understands that. And that's, I think that's a level of professional maturity that just comes with time, but
I agree with you as well. And fortunately for the founders and founder engineers who are in the audience, the answer is fortunately really simple in that one. It's, getting town. We like, we'll do monthly town halls, give everyone updates, but then also just explain some of the thinking behind the decision making.
Yeah.
And when people have the benefit of actually hearing the thought behind the vision, I found that it can be extremely valuable to get everyone rowing in the same direction.
Yeah.
If we take a step back from Activate, Cyrus would love to know more about your professional background experience and what led up to serving as the steward of the company.
Yeah. So, my career has had many, fortunate twists and turns. I've had a chance to operate at the largest companies on the planet. I've had a chance to work in government. I've had a chance to do academic research and really dive into problems that, it felt like nobody else was working on in the early days. So I was part of a startup in my very beginning of my career. I helped, be part of a team, took a company public, and then, I also watched the other side of going public too early, where we started to just, fall out of favor in the public market. So I've seen a lot. And but my career, there's no intentionality, I'll be honest. It's been sort of crossing the stream, feeling one rock at a time. But I guess the thing that I have always gravitated towards as I make those career pivots is, where am I going to learn new skills and like sharpen and advance my leadership ability? And so I think that, and I also chase my curiosity, but if I just kind of rewind, because I don't know if everybody, will have known my full background, started as a chemical engineer, immediately in the mid 90s, as I was graduating with my chemical engineering degree, I was basically looking at going and working in industrial gases somewhere outside of Buffalo. Actually, I kind of had a nice offer, like a chemical engineering dream offer. And I threw it all away. And I said, you know what, I'm going to move out to California, because this is when e-commerce was just beginning. Yahoo was barely a thing. Google wasn't even around. So this is the moment in time where I was sensing something, and I had convinced myself to put my degree on hold and just go. And so I worked with a boutique consulting firm, McKinsey and a BCG partner came together to just work on technology. We did this as like part of an awesome small little team I learned a lot about tech and kind of business, sort of all of these things. And then one of the companies we were supporting, the name was Avant Go. We were doing software for, remember those old Palm devices?
Yeah.
You remember those.
Yeah, they had the stylus embedded in a
stylus, exactly. So these things were so, in looking back, they were so dumb in terms of like what we can do now with a mobile phone, but we would sync it in a cradle. And what Avant Go did really well was in an offline mode, we brought the internet to the device. It was amazing. It was a great technology. And that's where I was a product manager. That's the company we went public. Ultimately, we sold to Sybase, which I think was acquired by Oracle down the road. It was one of the big database companies. But the window for that innovation was so small, or I guess in time, meaning from the moment we started Avant Go to the moment that people were just having wireless connectivity, the internet was probably 5 years. And so it was one of those, you know, you couldn't fully anticipate what was coming in the market. And yet we had a good run. And so then after that, I made a shift into, this is going to sound a little bit unusual because it was, I made a shift back into academia. I went to do a PhD because what I learned was I want to be an entrepreneur. I definitely knew that. But mobile technology, while it was super exciting, I decided I actually want to work on energy. And so I'm going to go back to a PhD and try to create something innovative and important in solar energy. And my thinking there was, I want to work on earth abundant materials that can scale to 2 billion people on the planet that didn't have energy access. And so that's what I worked on. And, you know, I was kind of known as the pyrite guy because I was working on iron sulfide, fool's gold for solar. I did that for the duration of the PhD. And my plan, honest to God, my plan was to keep working on the science and be the science entrepreneur. It's so funny, like this all comes full circle. I didn't get a chance to do that because I was given an opportunity I couldn't refuse. And that was to go join the Obama White House and help lead policy in energy, materials, manufacturing, critical minerals. And that's what I did. And I did that for a stretch of 6 years. And then my career had taken a turn because I wasn't planning to stay in government as like a profession. I wanted to get back to product and some innovation. And so, but I also believed that I had learned these kind of skills of operating at a different scale that was exciting to me. And so I wanted to keep going. And so when Nike reached out and said, "Will you lead sustainability here?" to me, I said 100%. So then I went to Nike, got to do so much cool stuff and worked with a great team and, just very creative. And then, you know, from there, I went to Amazon to really kind of push to the frontier of scale. And so I got to do that, building the retail sustainability program at Amazon, building that team. We did some really great things there too. I could kind of bore you to death on all the like corporate sustainability stuff. But one of the things I was very proud of is helping launch Amazon's first sustainable shopping program. And when you do it at Amazon, you're operating at a scale where small changes make huge impact when you do the math. So I left Amazon a couple of years ago and I wasn't sure what I was going to do next. Like part of me was thinking maybe, you know, something more entrepreneurial, and then Activate reached out. And like I said, full circle, I thought this was an amazing organization. I'm so excited to get back to some entrepreneurial like roots. And I think I have the right background to help scale this organization and scale its impact. And so that's why I came in. And it's been a little over 2 years. It's been an amazing kind of experience so far. We have so much potential still. And so, you know, that's my job every day to kind of unlock that. But that's a long version. And so.
Very cool. Exciting. I'm curious. So as you look back, you had an opportunity to have a conversation with that young chemical engineering student. What would you share?
Reconsider your choices for football fandom. Yeah, no, I would probably say, stop treating your career as the main event. That the biggest decisions of your life are personal. Who you build it with, what you tolerate, what you say yes to, what you say no to, and even when nobody's watching. And so I think even going back to that 20-year-old, brash, excited, ready to change the world, like really telling that version of Cyrus, like getting clear on your values early, because you only get one of these, and don't waste those years like trying to figure that out. Because again, like your biggest decisions in life kind of actually are outside. But if you can get to that level of kind of clarity early in those types of decisions, then your career actually benefits as well. And I feel like I'm not saying like I would have done anything different, but I do look back and think about the career really guiding many of my decisions early. I think I'd probably also say maybe that's kind of more germane, that complexity, it charges a tax. Complexity meaning, in big moments where you want to make big change and you want to actually, like how many times do we hear, I want to change the world? And I believe that. And so, but for you to do that, you have to immerse yourself in like very complex environments. And there is a change tax. Like it's not enough to be smart. You have to be understood. And, so that younger version of myself practiced simple communication relentlessly. And, clarity is a skill. The simplest message is usually the hardest to deliver. And so, keep training that muscle. It'll pay off in the long run.
Couldn't agree more. And I would add is just, to complement that is listening skills.
Yeah.
Because when I find it's a lot easier to say or convey an idea or a concept, if you can put yourself in your audience's shoes or at least understand where they're coming from. So it makes great sense. Cyrus, we're close to wrapping up. Before we do, I want to give you an opportunity to recognize anyone personally, professionally, who's had a material positive impact on you over the years.
Well, it'd be hard for me to answer that without saying, my parents. They were immigrants. They came over in the 60s at a time when, life was a little harder, and from India. Yeah. And, just think about that for a second. My dad came over to study at Purdue as a master's student, had never gotten on a plane until he was making a move across the world. And so and built a life here. And then I came along, my sister came along. And so I've always kind of, really looked up to my parents for their grit and their perseverance, and also just, their steadfastness. I think professionally, I might kind of give you a slightly different answer than maybe what you're used to, because I find inspiration in leaders of the past. And so, one that I've read a lot about, and I've kind of really just felt connected to in a weird way, is Teddy Roosevelt. He valued character above everything else. And so you even hear it now, the man in the arena speech that's kind of quite famous. I had that, the first part of that on the wall when I was leading my team at Nike, because it's really about the person who shows up, is not afraid to take a risk, not afraid to get knocked down, but just keeps getting up. And, it really kind of speaks to what he valued in people. And I like that too. I like people who like are deep on character and are willing to be misunderstood and just, do the hard work of life. And then the other thing that I found really inspiring about Teddy Roosevelt is this notion of taking bold action. It was kind of what we were talking about earlier. Bold action, even when you don't have all the answers, there's some uncertainty. Remember, he did a lot of trust busting. He conserved the national land. The national parks came from him. And so he wasn't waiting for the perfect answer, and he wasn't waiting for, everybody to agree. He acted, and you can see, he's had a durable impact in this world and like quite a meaningful way. So Teddy Roosevelt. And so I don't think you can pull him onto your podcast, but that's one that I like to read about.
I think it's brilliant. And for someone who lives outside Yellowstone National Park, I couldn't agree more. And good on him for preserving it. Cyrus, appreciate your time. Thank you. If there's anyone in our audience who wants to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
Go to activate.org. I think you can contact our organization through there.
Fantastic. Cyrus, again, thank you. And for the benefit of our audience, Cyrus Wadia, CEO at Activate. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators Investors.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.